You don't have to be a monster, but it certainly helps.
Hey, is that the Addams Family I see over there, or a bunch of DXers? Hi, DXers. Phil Wayne here for Market Scope, your monthly air check column here on the DX Audio Service. This month, Paul Burkhart of Watertown, Massachusetts, takes us on a DX band scan from a remote location.
This is Paul Burkhart reporting from my remote location in Chatham, Massachusetts, on beautiful Cape Cod. Chatham is located over 100 miles southeast of Boston, right on the Atlantic Ocean, in the elbow of Cape Cod. So I hope that you will enjoy what follows. I will identify the frequencies and the stations as I remember them. So here we go, and hope you enjoy this trip on the AM dial from far east of Cape Cod. This is 530, a station in the Turks and Caicos Islands in the West Indies, and then we'll go up to 540. Here is 560, which is a combination WHYN in Springfield and WMass and WGAN, and WHYN is now carrying Red Sox baseball.
A 44-year-old former kitchen worker at the Penobscot County Jail will spend 30 days behind bars for having sex with an inmate. John Chambers pleaded guilty to one.
The scene, they are clearly seen. What verse is that? Verse 21. It says you can...
This is 570, which is WMCA in New York City.
Spirit world.
Molar struck out. That's his third walk. And there's two on with one out. Pitch appeared low, but it was borderline.
WTAG in Worcester amongst some of the squealing coming from our TV over here.
1-1 in the sixth. Two on with one out.
590 WEZE in Boston. Kind of a big jumble at 600. This is after about 9:30 at night here in Chatham. WGIR Manchester amongst the jumble. I think this is 620 and it's WVMT in Burlington, Vermont.
World Series champions. Milne Travel Tours has a chance for you to see the Yankees and witness more history.
That's 30 WPRO Providence.
Fifth in danger of leaving two on here in the sixth. The 0-2 pitch to Bill Miller.
Up high, didn't chase one and two. Nixon at second, Millar at first with two down. 1-1 our score. Red Sox threatening here at the top of the sixth, Garland trying to work out of another jam.
660 WFAN in New York, Mets baseball.
Which is why I've always liked strippers.
670, I believe that is a Spanish station. Obviously it is. I believe it's from Cuba.
Sailboat that had gone down, and they reenacted it. And there were like three men, two women on the boat.
680 WRKO box. 690, that's CBF in Montreal, Quebec, all French. And WOR New York.
I did some play acting. I did a thing called Am I Nuts?
720 is very weekly WGN Chicago.
Stade de retour, le stade de Winnipeg.
7:30, that French station, I think it's CKAC from Toronto, I believe. Oh, 7:40, that must be CHWO in Toronto playing oldies. '60 must be coming from Cuba.
Lost his chairmanship because he challenged the elite, the status quo, the gatekeepers of the status quo.
'70 WABC in New York. That would be WSKO Providence, Rhode Island, broadcasting a Pawtucket Red Sox game.
Aquí con la música en nuestro programa, cruzada con Luis Palau. Gracias por haber estado con nosotros.
800, which I think is Transworld Radio, Netherlands Antilles.
Was not a clever little wink-wink First Amendment right.
And WGY Schenectady, New York.
At a Muslim primary school in Berry Park Road, I spoke to Sultan Mahmoud, the head teacher.
WNYC, New York City, National Public Radio.
Commerce Bank, we make interest-only loans
up to $450,000. For example, on a 15-year, $200,000.
30 WCRN, Worcester, Massachusetts, broadcasting Worcester Tornadoes baseball when you turn the radio around.
Easy application.
It's got to be a Spanish station from Cuba. Sounds like it's WHAS from Louisville in amongst the all this jumble.
Tag on the shoulder by Millar. Larry Ponson, the first base umpire, with right on the shooting.
50 is WEEI, the Red Sox flagship station from Boston. '60 is a French station from Toronto, Ontario, but there's going to be another station if I turn the radio to null out to CJBC. Nothing on 870 of anything that's understandable.
And it certainly was. Is if nothing else, is this kind of a justification for you here?
WCBS from New York City, New York Yankee Baseball. 90 is a station from Cuba, I believe, and the whistle comes from 891, which is over in Algeria, in West Africa.
Very much in the game for a team that has not played that well over 5 innings.
There is a... I don't know what station that must be, the Hamilton CHML in Hamilton, Ontario. Sure, about 910. That must be a Spanish station from, might be from Hartford, Connecticut.
Big Sir Jay, I just had to write some stuff down. Hello. Goddess Irina, how are you?
It's 920 WHJJ, Providence, Rhode Island.
Battered. The 18th overall.
30, that's WGIT in Rochester, New Hampshire.
Metropolitan, you're a Laval route, all in good shape and out to the East End. Have fun if it's like you name it, the South Shore, no problem.
940, News Radio 940 in Montreal, Quebec.
Women in East End express disappointment, but not necessarily surprise. Roberts, a white male. Isn't it funny?
50 WROL Boston over the jumble.
There's no waiting involved. For good times and great oldies.
Somebody say something?
It's oldies
96. 60 WCHNS in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
For Al-Anon, or visit our website at alanon.alateen.org.
In Portland, that's WCSH. I guess it's WYNZ in Portland, Maine, 9970 on the dial.
Take a peek at our radar screen here.
80. There, over the jumble is WCAP, Lowell, Massachusetts, with another station underneath it, and there are some other stations at 980 that I cannot discern.
Thanks, Paul. That's part one of your East Coast AM band scan. If you'd like to submit a market scope or air check of an interesting station from your area, send it to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 West Spring Street. That's in Upper Sandusky, Ohio, zip 43351, 1652. I'll send you back a shiny new CD full of classic radio jingles. Next, the DX Audio Service presents a brand new feature. We're talking radio.
Greg Hardison is a National Radio Club member. He's been a member for a real long time. He also publishes a newsletter called the Broadcast Band Update, which is available by email. Greg lives in California, and he's on the telephone because we're talking radio. Greg, tell us a little bit about yourself.
When I was about probably 4 or 5 years old, I discovered the radio and became pretty much instantly addicted to tuning around, doing the standard DXing thing from, you know, while growing up in the Atlanta area. And, in fact, my fondest memories are, of course, going to sleep most nights when I was a kid to WABC. Another nice alternative growing up in that part of the world was the preponderance of Cuban stations on the air with some fantastic music on at night, whenever, you know, Fidel would be quieted down. So all of that led to, you know, really a lifelong obsession with DXing, along with a rather strong interest in geography in all ways. So, you know, they kind of go together, of course. When I was 13, I heard about the NRC, the National Radio Club, and, of course, that was many, many years ago, and joined up at that point, and am a lifetime member as far as I'm concerned. I have not really been that organized in my DXing. I haven't collected a lot. In fact, I haven't collected a QSL in over 30 years, and lost my collection many years ago, which wasn't that big anyway. It was less than 100 QSLs, and, you know, I've just sort of stuck with dial twisting for the enjoyment of it, and the more so in the good old days, listening to the different varieties of programming that you would hear from different parts of the country in different formats and whatnot. I got into radio almost accidentally in 1981. You know, of course, was already grown and out and up and working in different things, and got a weekend job at the old KNTF in Ontario, California, country format 93.5, 66-mile drive one way. You know, the things you'll do when you first start out in broadcasting. I think it was $4 an hour I was making. Definitely got some good experience from that, and worked at various production companies on, you know, various part-time projects and whatnot over the next couple of 3 years in Los Angeles. Finally joined up with KABC Radio in 1983, where I spent 15 and a half years. The easiest things I can say about KABC are the things I didn't do. I never held a management title, I never had my own talk show, and I never sold airtime. But I did basically everything else from board operation to extensive news writing, on-air news presentation, also some work with the ABC Radio Network, some stringer work from Los Angeles, and some work for KGO in San Francisco as well, coming from the L.A. area. You know, since then have kicked around, spent some time at KCRW, Public Radio in Santa Monica, as the operations director. Have also worked in the, well, spent 14 years concurrently in the traffic business, mostly with metro traffic, where, you know, among other things, at one point was running the morning shift in L.A., was supervising that. Actually have done on-air traffic reports for most stations, I can say, because metro had a very strong penetration, most stations in the Los Angeles ADI.
How did you get around to starting the Broadcast Band Update?
Well, that's kind of funny. That started in April of 2003. And I don't even remember right now as we speak what the exact topic was, but there was something I felt I had to rant about in the broadcast industry, something that was going on. As I say, I wish I could, it might have been IBOC related, I'm not sure. And I just sat down at the computer and hacked out a couple of paragraphs and sent it to about 20 people. Got a couple of, of unexpectedly good responses out of the whole thing. So the next month, there was something else which stuck in my craw, so I did the same thing again. And it just sort of took off and started growing like a fungus, as things do on the Internet. I've been lucky to find some, you know, very good distribution through groups and whatnot. I especially have to tip my hat to Glenn Hauser and his World of Radio, because I pretty early on just, you know, found Glenn's email address and stuck him on the list, and lo and behold, he starts, you know, publishing and distributing parts of it. I haven't copyrighted it or anything. You know, mm-hmm. I'm making absolutely no money off of it. It's just strictly an avocation. You know, it's probably saved me a few trips to the shrink as far as being able to blow off steam. And, you know, just vent my own opinions, as well as, you know, distributing information. My goal with the whole thing is to stimulate conversation, contemplation, hopefully action here and there if things need improving. And as a result of that, you know, lives are improved, lives of people working in the radio business, as well as, of course, the listening public out there. That's always a good thing. You know, that's basically what I set out to do each month, along with, as I say, just distributing information. There's a large number of non-broadcast people on the list, you know, people who are just avid listeners, and even people with, you know, who have expressed slightly more than a passing interest in the radio business. These are some of the people I've gotten comments from who are, you know, learning about the business, getting a much better understanding of what really drives it.
Well, it seems like in our business right now, we've got so many different changes going on. If you were to put your finger on, say, the top three hot topics of positive nature in radio, where would you put that finger? What areas of radio would you say are really positive right now?
I would say, actually, the first thing really that pops to my mind, and I do, you know, I must say I haven't made a big deal out of this in the newsletter. I do some work for Clear Channel in the Los Angeles area. You know, my opinions, of course, are strictly mine, not those of necessarily of anybody else I know on the face of the earth. But that being said, I have thought all along that Clear Channel, you know, they're not the evil empire that people think they are. They are big, absolutely. They're huge. They're the biggest broadcast company on the planet. But that gives them room to be, you know, and maybe they could be more innovative in some of their programming here and there, but I don't think they've really received the credit for the innovation they have. I started noticing this, I'm placing this at about 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, with the old 1290 in San Bernardino, which I think still had the KMEN call letters and was in, you know, the facility still is under Clear Channel ownership. That was, to my knowledge, Clear Channel's first experimentation with what you hear now on Real Oldies 1690 in Chicago. It was a hybrid format where you would hear, say, a cut by Peggy Lee, followed by maybe Vince Guaraldi, Cast Your Fate to the Wind, followed by the Beach Boys, followed by, you know, just really dancing all over the genre from the late 50s well through the 1960s. And it reminded me of, if you had taken a typical MOR format, as heard, say, on KTAR or KMPC circa 1972, 1973. If you had taken that format and backed it up 7 or 8 years to the mid-1960s, this is what you would have had. And it really sounded damn good. I found myself at times, even though I live 60-plus miles from the transmitter and get an extremely marginal signal from the station, you know, here in Southern California, I found myself actually tuning them in on DX equipment to listen from time to time, just to, you know, get a dose of something different and something very, very good. There was no publicity, no promotion behind it whatsoever. And, you know, San Bernardino Riverside is a rather strange market anyway. It's not a market to test a format in because, you know, you've got so much penetration from Los Angeles and historically a kind of an offbeat market, shall we say. You know, with that type of experimentation, Clear Channel also was accused of being a conservative drum beater. But, you know, look who's picked up a chain of early Air America affiliates. Sure, some of those are dropping off now, but, you know, Clear Channel will always point to its property in Portland, KPOJ 620, which, if my figures are recollected correctly here, I believe has gained a 500%+ increase in audience after taking on Air America. You know, I could see Salem doing that, right?
Possibly, but I don't think so.
I don't think so. Not in our lifetime.
Yeah. Well, another positive thing which seems to be coming around is, at least on some of the bulletin boards and places I've frequented, it seems that Clear Channel and Intercom seem to be have hit it off rather well in doing New Orleans relief efforts.
Absolutely. Clear Channel and the folks at WWL with Intercom. And Intercom has always struck me as a classy company. You know, they always had a fine operation in Seattle with KIRO. I have had opportunity to listen to a bit of that feed coming through. I tell you what, somebody should create some kind of award for these guys and, you know, really just let the world know what kind of job they've done. It even got to the extent in the first couple of days after Hurricane Katrina where people were calling WWL on their cell phones while they were trapped on the roofs of flooded buildings. This facilitated several rescues from crews who were also listening and tuned in. They would catch locations, swoop down, and pick up some people. You know, here you have survivors as a result. you know, you can't get much more into community service than that.
There was, there's been many stations, and in fact, at last count, I think there's still around 20 or so that have not returned to the air. What have you heard about, you know, some of the broadcasters down there? Are they still struggling?
Well, one rather frightening thing I've heard is what WTIX is doing. And there again, you know, Clear Channel has kicked in. They have placed, in fact, Premier Radio Networks has placed a link to job wanted ads being placed by WTIX staffers. The approach taken by the station and the staffers en masse has been, hey, you know, we did what we could, now we're gone, not we're coming back, anything like that, and we need jobs. That really sends a chill up me right there. WTIX, of course, is a longtime heritage station in the New Orleans area. It was one of the big top 40 rockers in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, transitioned nicely to a news talk format. You know, they the first couple of days of the storm, they were on the air, and they were doing absolutely everything in their power to, you know, help out the community and the situation. It's going to be a long time before some of those stations return to the air. I don't know right now the exact status of, you know, each exact station, but I know that, for example, WVOG 600 was off the air. I know that the one on 1230, which I believe is still WBOK, maybe I'm wrong about that, they were silent for some time before the storm. So I really think that, you know, there's, and the market has been absolutely decimated, has been completely devastated. How do you measure audience figures, you know, in a market where the audience is gone, is not there? And not to mention the, you know, the retail businesses supporting the advertising business, that kind of thing. Ironically enough, in fact, I believe it was the Arbitron spring or the summer trends, the early summer trends, came out in New Orleans on the day that Katrina hit, on that Monday, the 29th.
It seems like Intercom and Clear Channel formed a relationship which really benefited their communities. Do you think more radio stations should be looking at this kind of synergy in case something should happen in their communities?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, and the FCC has been amazingly responsive to the needs of the Gulf Coast broadcasters, staying open at least two weekends in a row to process, in fact, I believe one was Labor Day weekend, to process the applications and the STAs and whatnot for stations to get back on the air. It would be nice if somebody at the FCC, and maybe I'm dreaming here, but it would be nice if somebody at the FCC would actually try to get together with the largest, say the 10 largest broadcasters in the country, and to craft a program under which, you know, specific to each market, under which stations would join resources, you know, and would do something like United Radio Broadcasters of New Orleans have done. This would, in a way, it would replace the old, what was it, the Code of Broadcasting?
Right.
The thing that we used to see announcements for every 20 seconds on radio and on TV stations. It would be so much more effective than anything like that. It would be hard to compare in any way. I think that's something that should be a priority with the FCC. And certainly it would be a better place for the FCC to put energies and resources than, you know, in the pursuit of alleged obscenity on the airwaves. And, you know, fortunately we're seeing, you mentioned positives. That to me is a positive, that we're seeing a decline in that sort of thing. You know, because telling you how to think or me how to think or anything like that is going to be a waste of time at our ages, right?
Right.
It's, you know, that's something that should be left up to adults, and adults must take responsibility for their children as far as what they see and listen to.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I think too many people are depending on the FCC to try to raise their kids by way of the radio or television.
And speaking of obscenity and such, I mean, we're, you know, usually Howard Stern is the poster boy for that, and we just recently saw that Todd Klemm and Howard seem to have kissed and made up, and I guess now you're seeing a lot of this programming going over to the satellite area.
Some people would almost call this the dark side of increased cooperation between broadcasters. Howard, even though I'm not a regular listener, but I was for many years, Howard is a brilliant broadcaster. For example, I would say that anybody in broadcasting should try to see his movie, Private Parts, if they have a chance, because of the perspective in the broadcast business that you get from that movie. You know, never mind that it's Howard Stern or whatever, he really nailed a good knowledge of the radio business specifically. In the movie, the way it's, you'll if you get a chance to see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. That extends all the way back to the mid-1960s in the movie, with the scene that was set in the old WHOM 1480. I think that anything that Howard is behind and has, you know, creative and for lack of a better word, managerial input into, and I speak only in an operations sense, I think anything like that is going to be ultimately successful. He will end up being the, you know, the savior, if there is one, of satellite radio in general. It's certainly going to be a much more viable medium because of Howard and his input. I don't have a lot of experience listening to, you know, the others, the hangers-on, the ones who are coming on board, and really have no opinion of them, and would probably not be able to listen objectively because of the fact that, you know, at what he does, Howard is the best. He really is.
I can see all the people going to Smith Barney right now and buying stock in Sirius.
One thing I've got to say about Howard Stern, too, this is something I've had a chance to meet this guy and to speak with him, to have a nice long conversation with him. I don't think Howard would have the success he's enjoyed over the years without his producer, Gary Delabate.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gary is the perfect individual to sit behind the scenes and is an extremely intelligent individual, despite his image on the show. And he just goes with the image on the show and sits back, does his job, and, you know, has helped create a monster there. You know, it's nice to see the added variety available in programming, because programming has become very homogenized over the years. A lot of people point their fingers to Clear Channel, but you can point your fingers to the top, 500 broadcasting companies, if there are that many left,
right,
in the country for doing this. This is something that is all along. I've noticed, for example, with the Infinity stations in Los Angeles, the music stations in L.A., I must say I'm an avid KNX listener for news, despite their relative controversies in programming over the last couple of years. You know, I think there's a lot of effort going on under that roof. The music stations, and I may be wrong about this, I have no inside knowledge, I'm only speculating, that the music stations generally follow three or four playlists, at least in the L.A. market, and they will take playlist A and run off of that for 3 or 4 days.
And that seems to be a fair comparison, only because of you know, what we hear back east.
They will take, then, you know, they will then go to playlist B, and then to C, and then to D, and then if you look at it over a month-long period, you'll realize for 3 or 4 days you heard the same X songs over and over.
Right.
And then you heard the same Y songs over and over again for the next 3 or 4 days, and so on, and then the pattern repeated 10 days later. And I've noticed that with, like I say, with the Infinity music stations of all formats in Los Angeles. They are expanding the playlist a bit on K-Earth, which is nice, because at one time I heard that in the old studio, anyway, they had something like 5,000 titles. It's ironic, too, when you look at that, because comparing oldies formats, when you look at what's happened with WCBS-FM,
mm-hmm,
becoming Jack FM at this point, and, you know, for a couple, 3 years before that switch, you know, I was hearing that, and I didn't get a chance to hear the station personally, but I was hearing that they had become much more streamlined and homogenized in their playlist. And I remember the first time I did hear WCBS-FM in the early 90s, I was absolutely blown away with the variety that they aired,
yeah,
in oldies. I mean, it was anything that was ever played on the air was fair game.
Yeah.
And they really did an excellent job at that point.
And would you say it's a fair assumption that that people miss that, that they miss hearing, say, the number 157 song of 1965?
I think that once people have a greater exposure to that song, they will realize, hey, you know, it has been 35 years since I've heard that. That really sounds good. I like that. That reminds me of another song, which reminds me of a third song, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take that, you multiply it by the number of listeners that are out there, you give them the availability of the medium, such as satellite radio, and, yeah, it's something that can potentially explode. Promotion is something I think that is lacking in a lot of this, because, as I say, Clear Channel has, right now, they've got Real Oldies 1690 in Chicago, WRLL. You know, it's getting some positive press. It's not really showing up that well in the ratings, but what's wrong with the idea of taking something like that, taking a marginal FM signal, even if you put it in another market, even if you put it in a market, say, within 300 to 400 to 500 miles of Chicago, which gives you lots of choices, of course, and put that on FM and promote the absolute hell out of it in the market and just sit back and see what happens.
That could very well work.
It could work very well. It could work, yeah, very well indeed. Another example is WFBQ in Indianapolis. I've had the opportunity to listen via satellite to some of their offerings, and I'll hear more variety typically on that station in an hour than I'll hear in Los Angeles in 3 years,
mm-hmm,
of dial twisting. You know, we've got our own Jack FM outlet, for example, out here. I really don't hear that much extra variety on that station that, you know, people claim to. Maybe I'm tuning in at the wrong times. I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe that's why I never buy lottery tickets either.
Greg Hardison on the telephone because we're talking radio, and Greg will be back with us on our next edition of the DX Audio Service, the November 2005 edition of the audio service. And you, the membership, need to let us know if you like this particular column. If you'd like to hear more columns like this, please send us a card, letter, a phone call, maybe even an email, or even attach a sticky note to the bottom of a carrier pigeon. Any way you can get that message to us, let us know what you like and dislike, because we're coming to the end of a year, and it's always good to know what pleases the membership, and we'll try to do more of that, rather than giving you a magazine which you may not find of any use. So please, comment to us, and let us know what you like and dislike. It's always important to us. And it goes without saying, be sure to support the editors of the DX Audio Service. All the guys need your help. If you have any information to contribute, please contact one of the editors. If you don't know their address, just simply send the information here to the DX Audio Service, to their attention, obviously, and I'll make sure that information gets on to them. Well, right now, we've got to get some information on sports. Here's Mr. Sports himself, Ken Onischuk.
Hello again, DXers. Ken Onischuk here in sports. And for the month of October, I have two items here. First is a commentary from Tim Cronin, a local columnist, on Tuesday, September the 6th, on the coming departure of John Rooney from the White Sox radio booth after 17 years shows what happens when management has no clue. Rooney's gone after this season, not because he wants to go, but because 670 WSCR management doesn't want to pay him what he's worth. Here's the deal on the no deal. The broadcasts are moving from ESPN 1000 WMVP to The Score, 670 WSCR next year. The contracts of Rooney and Ed Farmer were with the station, their employment approved by the team as commonplace in pro sports. Negotiations between WSCR and Rooney, who wanted a raise beyond what he's been making, collapsed a week ago. Farmer signed a five-year deal to continue on. To my ear, that was wrong on two counts. Rooney's worth every penny and should have been paid accordingly. Farmer, the monotone voice analyst who's been partnered with Rooney for 15 seasons, should have been the one replaced if anyone was going to go. Instead, Farmer becomes the play-by-play guy next year, even though his play calling is invariably dull, whether compared to Rooney or not. When he spells him for an inning or two, a new analyst will work with him. Rooney will, of course, do just fine wherever he goes. It could be Anaheim, where the TV booth is in flux, or St. Louis, where the Cardinals are moving from KMOX to 550 KTRS after 52 years, or perhaps a network assignment. Rooney also broadcasts college basketball and some football, so he won't be hurting. Sox fans at home who might have turned down the TV sound either to get away from Ken Hawk Harrelson or simply to enjoy Rooney now will not have that choice. Sox fans on the highway who listened to Rooney, someone who knew how to get Farmer going, now will have to listen to Farmer and an analyst to be named later. This is going to be a real pain in the ear. It's also one of those things that shouldn't have happened. As our fellow columnist Phil Arvia reported Saturday, Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf insisted that Rooney and Farmer keep making at least what they were making when the team switched stations. Viacom, Infinity-owned WSCR, is paying the team less than Disney-owned WMVP, which grossly overpaid for the Sox and Bulls a few years ago. In radio, announcer salaries often rise and fall in conjunction with the rights fees paid. Reinsdorf didn't want that to happen. Apparently, it wasn't going to happen, but neither was Rooney going to get that much of a raise. Big league play-by-play announcers make a ton of money, from $250,000 for those who with some experience to much more. Rooney was likely well above that, deservedly. Heavens knows what Vin Scully, the voice of the Dodgers from 1950, is making, but he's worth it. Yes, to you and me, $250,000 is more than we possibly need to live on. Unless he uses gold-plated Kleenex, it's more than Rooney needs as well, but that's not the point. The station will make a ton of money on advertising from the broadcasts, and Rooney, a personality as well as a broadcaster, deserves a fair cut. Remember, WSCR is the station that believes Mike North's bleedings are worth placing on the air and in morning drive, no less. And he's making more than $1 million a year. It's not like the station doesn't have the money. It just didn't want to pay it to Rooney. Big mistake. It's up there with three other unnecessary departures of Chicago sports voices. Last year's bye-bye of Steve Stone from the Cubs TV booth, the Bulls' failure to keep Jim Durham on the radio after the 1990-91 season, and we got stuck with Neil Funk, and the Blackhawks' inane decision in the summer of 1976 to not even negotiate with the peerless Lloyd Pettit. And I hope you're getting all the 1120 KMOX IDs, because you won't be able to hear them doing baseball after this year. It'll be on 550 KTRS, which I can hear here in Chicagoland, some 250 miles away, and then some into Wisconsin in daytime. Anyway, here's the National Hockey League information I have for the 05-06 season. The sporting news preview had nothing, and the hockey news, well, it was a little too early for that, since the pro teams have been off for a year. So here's what I have. In alphabetical order, the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, no station listed anywhere, but the broadcasters were John Ollers and Steve Carroll. The Atlanta Thrashers have moved to 680 WCNN with Dan Kamal and Billy Jaffe. The Boston Bruins on 1030 WBZ with Dave Goucher and Bob Beers and a three-station network. The Buffalo Sabres did not release their station. The Calgary Flames are on the Fan, 960 CFAC only. The Carolina Hurricanes out of Raleigh. No station listed, but announcers Chuck Caton and John Forslund. The Colorado Avalanche out of Denver on 950 KKFN and 23 affiliates with Mike Haynes and Norm Jones. The Chicago Blackhawks on 670 WSCR with Pat Foley and Troy Murray. The Columbus, Ohio Blue Jackets on 1460 WBNS and 101.1 WWCD. With 26 affiliates and George Matthews and Bill Davidge play-by-play. The Dallas Stars told me nothing. I guess 820 WBAP maybe. Announcers Ralph Strangis and Daryl Rio. Detroit Red Wings 1270 WXYT and 25 affiliates with Ken Call and Paul Woods. The Edmonton Oilers 2 years ago were on 630 CHED, don't know now, announcers Rod Phillips and Morley Scott. The Florida Panthers out of Miami on 560 WQAM with Randy Mahler and Steve Goldstein, as Jiggs McDonald has retired. The Los Angeles Kings on 710 KSPN and 11 station network with Nick Nixon and Daryl Evans. And Minnesota Wild next, 830 WCCO, Bob Kurtz and Tom Reed, 24 station network. Backup station is 950 KSNB, 20 games in Spanish, yes, on 107.5 KBGY. Montreal Canadiens were unavailable. The Nashville Predators, 104.5 WGFX and 560 WNSR with Pete Weber and Terry Crisp. The New Jersey Devils wouldn't release their station, but the broadcasters, yes, John Hennessy and Randy Velischek. The New York Islanders told me only 1130 WBBR. The New York Rangers on 1050 WEPN. And backup 770 WEPE with six broadcasters in the booth. Ross, Wischusen, Davidson, Rosen, Trotwig, and Albert. That's a mess. The Ottawa Senators told me nothing. The Philadelphia Flyers, 610 WIP with Tim Saunders and Brian Propp. And TV Channel 3, is that right? Yeah. The Phoenix Coyotes on 1060 KDUS and 93.3 KDKB, 9 affiliates with Kurt Kyleback and Charlie Simmer, television channel 3 there. The Pittsburgh Penguins, 94.5 WDVE and 970 WBGG with Paul Steigerwald and Phil Burke. The San Jose Sharks on the Fox, 98.5 KUFX and 9 affiliates with Dan Rusinowski. St. Louis Blues, 950 KTRS and non-commercial 88.7 WSIU in Illinois with Chris Kerber and Kelly Chase and 11 affiliates. 17 of them, I mean. Tampa Bay, Lightning, 620 WDAE with Dave Michigan and Phil Esposito. Toronto Maple Leafs on Mojo Radio, 640 CFMJ. And finally, 1130, that we'll do Vancouver Canucks, CKNW. Jim Hewson, John Shorthouse, and Tom Larscheid. I'll be back for an update next month. That's it for now. And talk to you again soon. And enjoy the tape and the convention memories. Bye-bye for now.
I'm Mary Hart, and you're listening to the DX Audio Service from the National Radio Club.
Thanks, Mary. At this time, I'd like to address a telephone call which I got last night from a DX Audio Service member. He and another person were wondering whatever happened to all that stuff that I was cleaning out of the studio. Well, the stuff is all gone. It seems that we had a couple sharp-eared National Radio Club members who jumped on my request at the first opportunity. If you remember, I said to send a card, a letter, an email, phone call, whatever, and I send you out a list, and you can basically just kind of bid. And, well, that's what those people did, and they got all the good stuff. Some of the good stuff included several desktop editor workstations, Windows 2K, Pentium 2 machines with large hard drives, which we use to edit the DX Audio Service and do miscellaneous production around the shop here. Also, the GE Super Radio 3, I think that went for $20, as I recall. The computers went for like $30, $36, $37 a piece. The AT&T telephone system, that's gone. That went for about $50, and that was a full business system, a Spirit system by AT&T. Also, the antennas, the FM antennas, which I had up on my tower that I took down just prior to our ice storm last year, and those are gone as well. So pretty much all the good stuff is gone. The remaining stuff is going to be put on eBay. If you are an eBayer, you can just look me up. My username is very unique. It's Fred Vobey. So if you are looking for some bargains, you may want to check there. Also, if you do have something to buy, sell, or trade, you're looking for something perhaps, don't forget you can give us a list of what you're looking for. We will post it here on the DX Audio Service. And if you are on the web, don't forget that the new EDX News magazine, that's website, does have a area where you can post your buy, sell, or trade items. It's called the DX Change. So take advantage of that, and maybe you too can clean out your room and or maybe even gather up some more stuff. My brother-in-law has a very unique saying. He says, we spend half our life gathering stuff and the other half getting rid of it. Who knows? Maybe Rob's telling the truth there. In volume 72, number 30 of DX News magazine, on page 20, Bruce Conti has resurrected our contest program. And if you'd like to do some contesting, well, it's very simple to do. Bruce writes, welcome to the National Radio Club's 73 DX contest called Going the Distance. In this contest for DX News volume 73, it's all about distance. Instead of assigning points for radio stations received, you'll be accumulating air miles. There are three regional categories in which to compete for supremacy: North America, Pan America International, and Transoceanic. Each category has two subcategories: accumulated miles and longest distance. And that's a total of six different categories in which to compete. If you'd like to partake in the contest, please contact Bruce Conti, C-O-N-T-I, at 46 Ridgefield Drive, that's R-I-D-G-E-F-I-E-L-D Drive, Nashua, N-A-S-H-U-A, New Hampshire, 03062-1174, or you can email him at nrcidxd@aol.com. Or if you just want a copy of it in writing, what we can do is just contact us, and we'll just photostat a copy out of the magazine and send it to you. Well, that music means that it's time for us to get up and go. But before we go, let's put on some of that Halloween music one more time. There we go. This tape is going to be mailed somewhere in West Central Ohio. And we will be mailing on the 26th of September. And hopefully this tape gets to you in one piece. Of course, we're always interested to know whether or not your tape arrives decently, in a timely fashion. And if that stamp has been canceled, which the post office claims they always cancel that stamp. We'll see. We'll see. Next month, we're hoping to be mailing from somewhere in the south. So we'll see how well it goes, depending upon the weather and the hurricane situation. But till then, good listening, DXers. 73, good DX, and get out and support radio.
Down in the valley on the foggy hill rocks with a crazy little demon blowing his top. Fire in his eyes and smoke from his head. You gotta be real cool to hear the words he said. He did a he had steam in his soul for the one he loved, so he had death on his mind, cause my demon let him go. Gonna run through the world till he understand his pain. Somebody help him get his demon home again. He did a ready, even put pretty hair on grandma's bald head. He made the moon back up, he even pushed back time. Took the fruity out of fruity, had the devil drinking wine. He did a